This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM in good old McLean County, 92.5 in Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, all up and down the good old double nickel for about 100 miles. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn. We also have a special guest with us today, Floyd Anderson, and he's going to talk about the Latin Mass. He heads up a Latin Mass group here in Bloomington Normal, and he's going to tell us a little bit about himself, and we're going to talk about the Latin Mass. I want everyone to remember out there, we're brought to you by you. If you would like to make a donation, you can do that at CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. If you'd like to make a donation, go there, and it will tell you how to do that. It will tell you a lot about ourselves as well, and you'll find out more about us and what we do. So we'll go ahead without any further ado and get into a discussion about the Latin Mass. So I'm going to turn it over to Floyd, and he's going to tell us a little bit about himself, and he's going to tell us also how he got interested in the Latin Mass. I know Floyd is from Southern California, and perhaps there was some interest down in Southern California. We were also last weekend up at LaSalle, Illinois, and went to a Latin Mass up there, and it was as beautiful as I remembered it. It was really enjoyable. So maybe Floyd can tell us a little bit about how they got their group started up there as well, if he knows. And so we'll go ahead and turn it over to Floyd. Floyd, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you got interested in the Latin Mass.
So I grew up in Southern California, and it's been quite a journey ending up here after the last moving around to probably 7 or 8 different states over the last decade since graduating college. I'm married to my wife, Rochelle. We have 4 children, ages 2 through 8, so very happy with our family life. We moved here in July because I got a very exciting job opportunity. I work in accounting for a manufacturing company in the area. And it was actually a very difficult decision, though, because we had a very vibrant traditional Catholic community in Greenville, where we came from, Greenville, South Carolina. So it was probably very comparable to St. John Cantius here in Chicago. Our priest, Father Christopher Smith, was very committed to restoring all of the beauty and wonders of our Catholic tradition that had been lost in recent decades. So they had Latin Mass 7 days a week. They also offered the Novus Ordo. But their Sunday High Mass was probably the most beautiful liturgy that I've ever experienced in across many churches across America. So with that, we had a really great community of just, you know, well-catechized families, so many young children for our kids to grow up with, who were homeschooled or who attended their, you know, their very faithful and traditional Catholic school. We had just incredible friends and this beautiful liturgy at the center of our life.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
What group of priests were they from? Yeah. The same order that has St. John's Cantus?
No, he's actually a diocesan priest.
Oh, really?
Yep. One of only 2 Latin Masses in South Carolina that I'm aware of.
Yeah. Around here, it's kind of hard.
Oh, yeah. So
hard to find, Latin Mass.
So you got interested basically because you were there in an area where there was a Latin Mass going on, and you were just exposed to it and found it beautiful and learned more about it. Is that the way it went?
It was in South Carolina that we really became deeply committed to the Latin Mass, and that became an essential part of our lives. So if we rewind a little bit, like how did we get to that point? So my wife and I, we're both from California. She's from the Bay Area. I'm from Orange County, but we met in college at Boston University, and we both came from parishes in our hometowns in California that were, you know, all the worst stereotypes that you can think of when you think of the Novus Ordo and the Spirit of Vatican II. It just very
use
modernist.
The word liberal.
Well, just extremely modernist.
Yeah.
When you say worse, can you name some of the specific things that went on in the
You know, liturgical dance and vacuous homilies that emphasize the natural rather than the supernatural, and heavy emphasis on being kind of a busybody, doing like focusing on staying active and having a lot of activity, but no like spiritual focus and development, no catechesis. So like going to college, I had my mother had instilled in me that, you know, I go to mass every Sunday, so I continued to do that, but I had no understanding of the Catholic faith. I didn't know anything about sin, anything about mortal sin, anything about needing to go to confession before receiving the Eucharist. These are things that I learned in college because we had an incredible community there, not traditional. They're somewhat charismatic, called the Brotherhood of Hope, and in our Newman Center, and they've reached out to us. They've reached out to me specifically and taught me so much about the faith, guided me to have an authentic Catholic prayer life and faith life, and to embrace the teachings of the church and really change my life.
And I'll interrupt you just a little bit. That's the one thing I want to try. Maybe we can get to it at the end of the more toward the end of the program. But I think there really is so much need for catechesis in the Catholic Church, don't you? Would you agree with that, that there are so many that could use so much more catechesis and understand their faith more specifically and solidly than most Catholics do today?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the primary ways of transmitting that catechesis, you know, apart from your parents, is the liturgy. My wife and I started dating our junior year in college. At the same time, I took a course on Catholicism that was taught by an Anglican professor. He was a Harvard Divinity grad, and he had an interesting approach. So he taught Catholicism, not like the theology or anything, but what it is and what Catholics believe by focusing on the fringes. So we studied, we read a book on liberation theology. I think it was the one from Gutierrez. We read some like feminist Mariology, just like crazy stuff. But we also learned about the traditional movements within the church as well. We learned about SSPX. We learned about Sedevacantists. We learned about all of these different things. And that was the first time that I realized that, you know, being Catholic wasn't just assenting to whatever your church was doing at the time. Like there was actually a diversity of different approaches and beliefs within the Catholic faith.
Right. And when Floyd here kind of says SSPX, he's talking about Society of St. Pius X.
Yes.
And he's also talking, instead of a contest, he's talking about those people who believe that the last pope was Pope Pius X and that the papacy has been vacant since that time. That's what sedevacantist means, a papal vacancy. So I just want to make sure our listeners understand that. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So not that I embrace any of those any of those communities, but
quite the opposite.
Yeah, so that's when I started to pay a little bit more attention to what was going on, and instead of just, you know, like if you're in a charismatic community, especially around college kids, you think that embracing the faith is this kind of like Protestant idea that you just like let it go and just sing the praise music and do the like lift your hands in the air and all that stuff, and it felt kind of forced. So eventually we started gravitating toward more traditional Novus Ordo liturgies and started attending a church in Boston that was run by the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, that was a more reverent Novus Ordo liturgy than what we had in the school.
I guess what I miss more than anything is the mystical part of the Catholic religion. I think that's so important. You lose that with the Novus Ordo, or, you know, with the new Mass and so forth. You don't have that mystical, the reaching out to God and to the saints.
Yeah, Floyd, you probably heard of the phrase, you know, lex orandi, lex credendi.
Yes.
How we pray is how we believe. How do you feel that the Latin Mass is different, say, from the Novus Ordo Mass in that respect? I mean, what, you know, does the Church mean, especially back at the time that they preached that, lex orandi, lex credendi?
Yeah, I think you see it in looking at what changed with the implementation of the new Mass. So, essentially, and this could be controversial, but I strongly believe that there's certain modernist elements in that were, you know, unleashed with Vatican II. And
there certainly were.
So when you say modernist, I assume you mean, you know, tending more toward the social and tending more toward the material than the traditional Catholic liturgy and also the traditional Catholic understanding and belief as separates us more from, say, the our Protestant brothers and sisters and also the secular world.
Yes, like the denial of the supernatural. If Vatican II kind of opened up the Church to modernist theology, then the new Mass is the lex orandi that fosters that modernist theology. So everything that is sacred and mysterious is kind of stripped away, thinking that, you know, it's not fit for modern man and his rational approach to everything.
What a mess.
Well, I mean, there's a specific quote from Cardinal Montini, who became Paul VI, that was really troubling to me, and we didn't really like close the loop on how we got from attending like faithful, more reverent Novus Ordos to almost exclusively attend the Latin Mass, but this quote really struck me. He claimed that Latin is not the only obstacle to modern man's participation. The variety of its forms, the dramatic progression of its rites, the hieratic style of its language, the continual use of sign and symbol, the theological depth of the words and mysteries fulfilled, all seem to conspire to impede the understanding of the liturgy, especially for the modern man, accustomed to reducing everything to an extreme intelligibility. The faithful will find themselves excluded from its inner spiritual precincts, whereas the progress of culture has accustomed them to understanding and knowing all about everything in their environment and field of interest. We must transform the difficulty posed by the liturgical rite into a help for the penetration of the hidden meaning contained in Catholic worship. This was cited by Dr. Peter Kwasniewski in Noble Beauty, Transcendent Holiness, which that quote like really struck me. So I began to think, like, we know that we can rely more heavily on things that are ancient because they grow organically. They're, you know, it's a bottoms-up approach. There are many like erroneous ideas and beliefs that spring up and they die, and the deaths of those things make the overall organism of the Church stronger.
And the overall organism of the government also, I think, is better when it grows out of living experience rather than something thought up intellectually, put down on paper.
Yes.
And our modern government, even our founding fathers, was instituted by, I think, convoluted philosophical ideas that were proposed by John Locke, Thomas Hobbes and others in the 18th century that have led to a lot of our modern problems with government as well.
Yeah, so actually, I think the person who primed me most to this idea, since I work in accounting and finance, I've studied books from somebody named Nassim Nicholas Taleb. He's kind of like a philosopher, but his background is in options trading, so he's what they call a quant. Very interesting person, but he came up with this concept of fragility, robustness, and anti-fragility. And things that are fragile are things that are optimized or efficient, but when they're exposed to shocks, they break. Things that are robust have more redundancy built in. They're less likely to break when they're exposed to shocks. But there's also a category of things that can be considered anti-fragile, and that means that exposure to shocks actually makes them stronger. And he points out that modernity is fragile, while ancient things are anti-fragile. So an anti-fragile, something that's anti-fragile, think about like subsidiarity and city-states and government. You might have a small district that has a bad policy that it puts into practice, but then it collapses. And then overall, the region is stronger because of the failure of that error.
Exactly. A few cells can collapse, but the whole organism continues to go on.
Yes.
And, this is right, because things that occur over long periods of time through experience are naturally evolve in a way that is going to survive those shocks, or else they wouldn't evolve at all.
So. Absolutely. And the church, and specifically the Roman Rite, the Roman Rite is anti-fragile, or the traditional Latin Mass is anti-fragile, because it not only endured all of these chaotic times and these major errors that impacted the church through the centuries, but it grew stronger because of the reforms that sprang from them. And the Novus Ordo, on the other hand, is classic top-down, fragile, planning-based implementation.
Exactly. We're going to have to stop here and take a break, but I want to come back on that theme, is that there's a difference between something being, organized from the top down and organized, say, intellectually and on paper, rather than something that grows from the bottom up, grows over time, and evolves in various places and comes together in such a way that it has a resilience that the, plan that comes in too short of a time and from the top down does not contain and probably never will contain. So we'll come back to that theme. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
G.K. Chesterton wrote, "We do not want a church that will move with the world. We want a church that will move the world." Indeed, it was the Holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church that built Western civilization. Discover the sublime beauty, transcendence, and silence of the ancient liturgy that formed so many of our great saints. To connect with the Latin Mass community of Bloomington Normal, visit latinmassblono.org. That's latinmassblono.org.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, and also I'm here with Floyd Anderson, and we're talking about the Latin Mass. And Floyd has gotten into some very, very interesting topics and deeper understanding and analysis of the Latin Mass and some of the reasons why he was attracted to it. We're going to talk a little bit more specifically as we go along. We will be talking about what Floyd's and the group that he is with, what are their goals in establishing the Latin Mass? What do they hope to accomplish with this? And find out maybe how much interest there is in the Latin Mass. What are some objections that people have to the Latin Mass? And try to get along some of those lines as we go along. So I'm going to turn it back over to Floyd. You were talking about some things. Floyd, go ahead and pick up on, where you were going, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So I was discussing how my finance background made me interested in books by Nassim Taleb, and he had this concept of fragility and anti-fragility, and in general, things that are ancient tend to be anti-fragile, meaning that they grow stronger with shocks, and that would be the Latin mass. Things that are modern tend to be fragile, and that means that they might have widespread devastating consequences from using a top-down approach to things, but they ultimately collapse. And I believe that the Novus Ordo, if you look into, you know, what did Pope Paul VI believe as he was implementing it, and like what was his reasoning, and how was it done? You know, what kind of tactics did Annibale Bugnini use while he implemented it? It's very much a Soviet-style top-down implementation, and I think it created something that that ultimately will collapse.
Okay, when you say Soviet-style top-down implementation, what are you referring to there? I mean, specifically the Soviet Union, or
no, not
just the idea of sort of a modernist government sometimes that they have this authority that seems to grow from the top down and spreads out and covers, you know, an entire territory rather than letting things grow up from the grassroots and contribute to the whole. Is that more what you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. Thinking that you know what's best and then implementing these ideas in a way that's widespread and its consequences. And typically, you know, it's blind to certain areas that result in unexpected events having massive consequences.
I think that's one of the very strong points of the Catholic Church is the whole idea of subsidiarity.
Yes.
And it is strange that the people of the world, especially it seems us moderns, have this idea that somehow the Catholic Church was this top-heavy hierarchy. It is a hierarchy, of course, but a hierarchy needn't be top-heavy, and that it was this top-heavy hierarchy that somehow or another forced everything from the top down. But I think if we look at the history of the church, and we can't get into a lot of that today, but the fact is that it was sort of the opposite. It was the Roman hierarchy that got very, very top-heavy. And when it collapsed and fell, it wasn't the church that caused what was deemed as the Dark Ages. It was the church that brought back the light, and it did a lot of that from the ground up. Mm-hmm. And there was this whole concept of subsidiarity. And as Floyd was talking about, much of the liturgy, much of the thinking, and much of the theology and the choreography, if you might want to say, and so forth, of the Catholic Church grew up from all kinds of varied places, and it is still varied today. I mean, if we look at our Eastern Communion, they have a liturgy that is entirely different in many ways from the Roman liturgy and so forth. And there was a lot of variety in the Catholic Church. It was worldwide and universal. And I think this whole idea that it was some kind of a top-heavy monarchy, hierarchy to, you know, push things from the top down is sort of a I don't know how it got started, but I think it's a false picture. Would you agree with that, Floyd?
Yes, absolutely. And then there's also the idea that modernity tends to reduce people to whatever is most efficient or, you know, intelligible. Nassim Taleb has this metaphor of the bed of Procrustes. Procrustes was a Greek, or in Greek mythology, he was a bandit who would kidnap people and then make them sleep in his bed, and he would chop off their limbs if they were too tall or stretch them out if they were too short. So,
the Procrustean bed.
Yeah, so in his book, Anti-Fragile, he emphasizes that modernity has that effect on man. And I think we saw that in that quote that, you know, I brought up from Paul VI when he was still a cardinal. And then Kwasniewski points out that in his book, Noble Beauty, Transcendent Holiness, He says that liturgy that is totally intelligible is irrelevant because it no longer summons forth from us the leisurely labor of the deepest and fullest response we can give with our senses, imagination, memory, intellect, and will. Liturgy that is totally transparent is invisible and thus ignored because it does not catch our attention at the very point where the invisible God becomes visible in otherworldly signs and symbols. And he has this beautiful simile, like light becoming narrative in the stained glass window. Liturgy that is totally accessible is boring because it is too easy.
So, right. Yeah. You have nothing to reach for. It's mm-hmm. too easy.
I would have to agree with that. The fact is from the outside, a stained glass window doesn't illuminate or give up. It's yep. only when you move inside of its mysteries and so forth, do you see the beauty and the light of the stained glass window as it comes into the church. You don't see it from the outside, and I think modernism treats things too superficially, you know, breaking them down into their material components, and all of a yep. sudden you don't have the thing that you started out with anymore at all. It's gone.
It stripped away everything that was deemed inefficient or inessential, and in doing so it greatly reduced the ability of the Mass to transmit the faith.
Did. Rather than educate people and catechize people, that got to be, they thought, or what, too difficult to do, so they changed things so it's too readily available. That's where we get the dancing on the altar and the prancing around the church. And
I think sometimes there's this desire in modernism, I felt, and we're getting a little bit away, but that's okay. I think it's a good topic here to talk about. I've always felt that sometimes in a modern secular type world, many of our clergy and so forth, sometimes maybe the people fell away to a certain extent, and they feel as if they're not as relevant as possible, and there's this chasing after relevance a lot of times that leads to this somehow.
Yeah.
You know, trying to be relevant, trying to be modern. And the question you have to ask is, relevant, you know, is a ratio. It's always, you know, relevant to what?
Yeah, relativism as well. So if the Second Vatican Council brought about or, like, institutionalized our modernism, and then the Novus Ordo was the tool for implementing it, then what modernism necessarily leads to is ultimately a Protestant faith. And if we embrace modernist ideas and we embrace a modernist liturgy, you're going to see a parish that's full of all these different ministries and activities and very busy but doesn't spend any time in contemplative prayer and isn't rooted in good catechesis. And ultimately, like, I talk to my friends who attend parishes that are like this, and it's hard to grasp, like, how they don't see that what they're doing is really no different from all the different Protestant denominations that have varying degrees of success. And they're just, you know, they're wanting to implement new programs and try new things and see what works. But all of these programs that they implement, they're all fragile. Some of them might have better success than others, but they're completely missing the point.
I would have to agree. I think it also leads to a lot of indifferentism, that one thing is as good as another as long as your intentions are good and you're doing something.
Yeah, and you know, relativism, like, there is no – another part of modernism, there is no objective truth. So what's true for me might be different from what's true for somebody else. This is another – idea that is that was embraced by Protestants.
Totally false. And it starts out, I think, if you we're getting into some deep philosophy, it starts out, I think, if you get back into the 18th century and you get back to Descartes' philosophy, is I think therefore I am, and trying to ground everything in thinking, well, it leads to what you see today. If I think that I'm a girl, I'm a girl. I mean, the fact is it leads away from the true essence of things,
yeah,
which reach much deeper than the surface. And so, you know, you get, again, you get this indifferent. It leads to an indifferentism, not only an indifferentism among, say, religions,
yeah,
but an indifferentism as to material itself. I mean, indifferentism as to things that no longer have an identity and an essence. And we get away from even the whole idea of asking the right questions of, you know, what and who is man? And I think, as long as we're speculating here, I think that objective materialism always leads on the part of human beings into pure subjectivism. You know, when you reduce things to material, pure material, you lose their identity and you reduce things to just pure subjectivism. Yep. If you take, like, for example, the philosophy, the objectivist philosophy of Ayn Rand, ultimately it reduces down to pure subjectivism. You know, it's whatever I think is, it's whatever I think I am or anything is. You know, in other words, I am God, so to speak. And God is wiped out of the picture. And that's what happens, I think. We reduce to the pure self. But go ahead, Floyd, if you want to talk, speculate on that a little bit.
No, I think you're right on.
So, but at any rate, how do you think, you know, the Latin Mass would bring Catholicism and Catholics back to a deeper contemplation and in understanding, you know, the idea perhaps that God really matters. There is a huge difference in the world when we have the proper relationship with God and a proper idea of God than there is when we don't.
Yeah, well, we can look back in history at everything that the church accomplished over the centuries. Clearly the Latin Mass had an incredible ability to convert, you know, across many cultures, geographies, time periods. It was universal and just incredibly effective.
And what I think also about the solid church belief before modernism, and you still find it among some of our great bishops today, such as, you know, Bishop Schneider,
yep,
Athanasius Schneider, very, very significant name there, Athanasius. And that is that the Catholic Church is the one true universal religion. We're afraid to say that nowadays. We're afraid to say that the Catholic Church is the true church. It is the Church of Christ. It is the church that built Western civilization. And that without the foundation of the Catholic Church, Western civilization is dissipating and will probably go out of existence. And we're afraid to say that because there is this modernity, this emphasis on indifference. I think it was instilled into the United States with our founders, this idea that this somehow would solve the problem of religious squabbles and so forth. But it institutes problems, as we're talking about, that are even greater. What do you think of that, Floyd?
Yeah, since you brought up Bishop Athanasius Schneider, I came across a quote recently from him where he addresses this topic. So, the drastic change of the millennia-old rite of Mass enacted by Pope Paul VI unquestionably weakened the essentially sacrificial, Christocentric, and liturgical character of the Mass, shifting it more toward the meaning of a fraternal banquet and a community-centered prayer meeting, which phenomenologically is more similar to Protestant prayer services.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah.
I think what shocks a lot of people, well, Lynn, you were going to say something. I don't know if you over here.
I think that's all very true. I mean, people that don't know the Latin Mass have no concept of what the Roman Catholic Church was. We are fortunate enough to have grown up during that time and seen how things have evolved, and it's not evolved for the good.
And
we need to get back to the mystical, to the really uniting to God.
One of the problems is that you run into a lot of, so many of us, so many of people have been sort of, modernism seeps in, and the whole, you know, Protestant, and I'm using this as a descriptive term here. I'm not using it to, you know, to try and denigrate Protestants or anything like that. But this Protestant modern idea has seeped in, and it's hard for a lot of people to get out of that particular paradigm and relate, you know, to the Latin Mass. They see it as something that they don't understand, and it doesn't have the activity and meaning for them that maybe it does for us. So yeah. How do you deal with that, Floyd?
I've definitely seen that as well, where my friends, like, they don't understand the appeal of the Latin Mass, where they try attending one and, you know, it doesn't resonate with them. That's because they've been culturally conditioned to the Novus Ordo, so it feels unnatural at first. It definitely took me and my wife a while to grow accustomed to the Latin Mass and to really get to the point where we couldn't go back. It wasn't like instantaneous, like, oh, this is everything we've been missing when we first attended the Mass. It's confusing, especially, you know, if it's a low Mass. I think the first one we attended was a low Mass. You have this notion that to be an engaged Catholic is to, like, sing your heart out and shake everybody's hand during the kiss of peace. And
I think maybe it's the modern idea. We yeah. always need to be doing something. But at any rate, we really jumped into the deep end of the pool right off the bat. And I hope it's been interesting to everybody. It's been very interesting to me, and I think it has been for a lot of you people out there. We're going to have to take a break now. We'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit about some more specifics when we do get back. So stay with us. We're going to be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
G.K. Chesterton wrote, "We do not want a church that will move with the world. We want a church that will move the world." Indeed, it was the Holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church that built Western civilization. Discover the sublime beauty, transcendence, and silence of the ancient liturgy that formed so many of our great saints. To connect with the Latin Mass community of Bloomington Normal, visit latinmassblono.org. That's latinmassblono.org.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. And we're talking with Floyd Anderson. We're talking about the Latin Mass. And we're going to get into a little bit more specifics about Floyd's group and the Latin Mass and what they're trying to accomplish. So we'll go ahead and get into that in this last segment. And Floyd, you know, what are some of your goals right here in getting the Latin Mass?
Sure. So selfishly, because this is what caused us to actually try to do this for me and my wife, it's to recover the sense of traditional Catholic community that we had when we were in Greenville. But more specifically for the group, we have two main goals. The first is build a community of traditional Catholics who demonstrate the stable existence of a group of faithful attached to the Latin Mass. So that's because in Summorum Pontificum, it specifies that in parishes where a group of the faithful attached to the previous liturgical tradition stably exists, the parish priest should willingly accede to their requests to celebrate the Holy Mass according to the rite of the 1962 Missal. So we want to build that community and then demonstrate its stability. That's one of our goals.
And one thing I want to get in here real quick before I forget it, and we want to get it in at the end of the program too, mm-hmm. if you can remind me, is that for those people who are interested, you know, in knowing more about the Latin Mass and about your group, how do they get in contact with you?
Sure. So there's a website, latinmassblono.org. That's Latin Mass and then just BLONO.org. That's really just a landing page. I'm not much of a web developer or anything, nor do I have much time. So it just directs you to the meetup group. And the meetup is where we organize all of our events. And the meetup group is called the Bloomington Normal Latin Mass Fellowship.
About how many people do you have interested in it right now?
We currently have 34 members, and they're all from diverse backgrounds. So they come from many different churches, including historic St. Patrick's, Epiphany, St. Patrick's of Myrna, St. Catherine Drexel in Springfield, Queen of the Holy Rosary in LaSalle, and St. Andrew's in Fairbury.
Okay, and you know, there's the Latin Mass up in LaSalle. How often do they have, Lynn and I were up there last week and met you up there. How often do they have that?
It's every week, but once a month they do a High Mass. It's usually the third Sunday of the month.
Yeah, and that's what I would recommend that you go and see if you haven't been to a Latin Mass before. Be prepared to spend a little time. It's going to take probably an hour and a half, but it's beautiful. And my advice, and I don't know if you agree with me or not, Floyd, if you haven't been to one, just sit back and enjoy it. Don't try to follow Latin, English, and all that. I think you'd be better off the first time you go just to sit back and drink in the beauty of it and the feeling and movement of it. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. And another thing to keep in mind, because most people's first impression of traditional Latin Mass communities is that they're cold and unwelcoming. But keep in mind that the Latin Mass, unlike the Novus Ordo, the chapel is generally dead silent before the Mass and after the Mass. People don't socialize in the chapel.
That's right.
Yeah, if you come in and you're waving to your friend and he doesn't respond, that's why. So just keep that in mind and don't think that because it's so quiet that it's a cold and unwelcoming community.
Yeah, you have to keep in mind that with the Latin Mass and that type of community, we are there to praise God. We're centered around God, not around us and our activities.
And one of the
we're there to bring offering to God, offering ourselves to God. It's not like it's not a community in a sense that community is probably not the right word to use.
Well,
we're not there to be entertained.
Yeah, we don't take our cues from the Protestant mega church right down the street.
And what's interesting is that because of that silence and quiet, though, you notice that even the children who are normally rambunctious and so forth at Mass, and of course we're glad to have them there because, you know, it's a good idea to expose kids from very early age to the Mass and to the church. But nevertheless, they seem to quiet down. There seems to be less rambunctiousness even among the children because they seem to sense that there's a quietude and an awe and beauty there that wouldn't be there when there's too much rustling around and you know, too much conversation and noise and so forth, especially maybe out in the Narflex or whatever. So it's different.
Yeah.
The other thing is to remember is that the priest is not going to be facing you if you attend the Latin Mass. The priest is going to be facing away. He is leading us, you know, to the new Jerusalem, which is coming down to touch the earth, just as, you know, Christ predicted. And so we're processing. We process into the church, and during the Mass, we're in effect in a procession. And we're all facing the east. And it doesn't make any difference geographically which way the church is facing. You're facing east. And so, you know, if you understand that, it makes a little more sense.
Yep. Right. And the priest is there to do his primary job as priest, and that's to offer sacrifice, not to entertain us.
And you have a profound sense of that in the Latin Mass.
Yes.
That it really feels like an act of sacrifice, especially everything building up from the beginning of the Mass. There's this profound sense that something very important is coming.
And do you think, Floyd, the Latin Mass would make a stronger sense of Catholic identity, of, you know, who we are as Catholics, than the Novus Ordo?
Absolutely. So there's some statistics from, that was a national survey by Father Donald Kloster, and he had a statistics PhD helping him, so it seems like some pretty credible findings. But he administered a survey nationwide and found differences in beliefs between Latin Mass parishes and Novus Ordo parishes, and the differences are really striking. For example, approval of contraception. Only 2% of Latin Mass parishioners approve of contraception versus 89% of Novus Ordo.
Wow, that's quite a separation.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can be shrewd and say, like, okay, well, that doesn't show causality, because the hardcore Catholics are more likely to gravitate toward the Latin Mass, and they're also more likely to believe what the church teaches. But when I think of, like, where do I want to raise my children and what kind of plausibility structure do I create around them so that they actually believe and hear from multiple sources and all around them the things that I'm teaching them at home, do I want to surround them with, you know, 89% of the people there reject one of the core beliefs of the church? Or do I want to surround them with an environment where everybody is on the same page about these essential teachings?
That's a good point. We are social beings, and we need support and reinforcement from people around ourselves. Mm-hmm. We do need environments that are stable. We need environments in which we understand the civics of the environment, how you respond and react with people and so forth. Every single group of human beings need that. And to try and pretend that we can be reduced to individual atoms, each of us acting solely autonomously in our own way, makes for a very, very lonely and very, very difficult world to smoothly move around in. So I think that's one of the things also that helps contribute to a sense of being Catholic, understanding together, and being able to, like you say, reinforce those things. So it's not just a matter of saying, oh, well, those people would be that way anyway. And, because they gravitate there. But the point is that if more and more people gravitate there, more and more people, I think, will also gravitate toward the Catholic ideas of being a marriage between a man and a woman, and also people who are understanding of their own identity, that males are males and females are females. And those things are good things, and they help us get along with each other much, much better and have a better sense of personal stability as well. And again, more people will believe that abortion is wrong. It's a lot better when we have something that takes us together in the same direction and reinforces those things that we ought to believe.
You're right. Do you have any statistics on abortion and the belief with the difference between either?
Yeah, so the Latin Mass attendees, only 1% approve abortion, while 51% of Novus Ordo attendees approve of abortion.
It's amazing that it's that high.
Do you think the Latin Mass, we just talked about contraception, abortion, transgender, homosexuality, that kind of thing, and as you said, it the people that go to the Latin Mass would be far more consistent with the church's teaching on those things.
Yeah.
Do you think that it promotes a better prayer life?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where I could reflect on my own personal experience a little bit. My whole life, growing up in the Novus Ordo, from as early as I can remember until really up until the point where we started attending the Latin Mass, I would space out from the beginning of the Mass almost all the way up until the end, with like a few intermissions of paying attention, because it's just the priest is droning on and on and on in prayers that some of them are good prayers, but it just doesn't there's no space and there's no silence, there's no time for contemplation and reflection. And if the priest isn't talking, then you're listening to music, most of which is, well, in most places it's profane music, not in the sense that it's explicit, but like in the sense that it's not sacred. And that also doesn't foster prayer or reflection. So, the silence is inherently built into the Latin Mass. And it provides a great environment for contemplative prayer.
Yeah. Do you have any other statistics available?
Yes. So some of the other differences were weekly Mass attendance. 99% of people who attend the Latin Mass attend every week. 22% for Novus Ordo. And then approved gay marriage, 2% for Latin Mass, 67% for Novus Ordo. And then percentage of income donated, 6% of income donated in the Latin Mass and 1.2% in the Novus Ordo.
That ought to perk up somebody's ears in the church.
Yeah. So if you have a strong preference for the Latin Mass, I would encourage you to go the distance and actually attend that parish and contribute your funds there. We don't want to create this illusion that we're satisfied with the Novus Ordo liturgy if we're not.
When you see people becoming interested in the Latin Mass, a renewed interest, you see more young people than older people, or is it about even?
Yeah, it's definitely more young people. And just anecdotally, every parish that I've attended, far more young people in the Latin Mass than in the Novus Ordo. I remember Mater Dei Parish in Irving, Texas, where we first started regularly attending the Latin Mass, not exclusively, but regularly, that they were run by the FSSP. If you go there now, it's absolutely overflowing, and it's the median age is probably like 30. It's kind of...
It's fantastic.
It's pretty wild. But, you know, critics of that are going to point out that there's only one, that's probably the only Latin Mass parish in the entire diocese of Dallas, because it was, you know, engineered that way. So you pull all the traditional Catholics into this one church that's really small and in a not so great area. And then they're not there, you know, causing trouble in all of the other parishes in your diocese. And I don't think it's good. I don't really think it's good to have everybody concentrated in one place. As spectacular as that parish is, the priests there, I'm sure, are overloaded. They already offer two high masses and several low masses every week. It would be, I think it'd be more ideal if there were far more Latin masses available. And then people could attend closer to home and actually build a community local to where they are and actually influence the other families, be a good example for the other families there. Because now these traditional families are,
they're isolated.
Yeah.
And the one thing I also, you know, along that line, along, you know, normalizing things a little bit more, the one thing I do want to point out is that we, people who are interested in the Latin Mass, should never allow ourselves to think that somehow or the Novus Ordo is, doesn't satisfy the requirements of the Catholic Church.
Yes.
And we shouldn't put ourselves somehow or another on a pedestal. That somehow, because we can, you know, and of course I don't attend Novus Ordo Masses almost all the time, that if you attend the Latin Mass, somehow, you know, you are sort of like a Pharisee, you're better than, you know, and do things better than everybody else, because there are many, many very reverent and dedicated people, you know, who are attending Novus Ordo Masses. We must never, ever forget that. But I think we have lost, as Floyd said, we have lost a lot of beauty and mystery in the church that needs to be restored. And the Latin Mass is one way, you know, to do this. It may be also that we can improve, too, the Novus Ordo Masses that we have and make them more reverent as well, because I think, as Floyd pointed out, sometimes they're going way too far in trying to somehow be socially relevant rather than spiritually great.
Right, like the mega churches. Two things I'd like to bring out. When we were up in LaSalle, my granddaughter, who is in her 20s now, was with us. She was from St. Louis. She lives there now. Anyway, during the Mass, when they rang the bells, during the Sanctus and at the consecration and stuff, that really impressed her. Well, they're telling the people, everybody all around the area, that God is coming. I thought that's really...
Oh, you're talking about the outside bells.
Yes, the outside bells.
The church bells. Yeah, that was...
They rang them, you know, ahead of time before Mass started, then as Mass was starting, and then at key points during the Mass. That impressed her so much.
Yeah, we need those kind of things. I mean, after all, we're human beings, and we respond to material things. There's nothing wrong with material. You know, we need both. We have to fly on both wings. We need the spiritual and the material, both, but they have to contribute to each other.
Right.
And I think, you know, for the first time, our granddaughter, you know, saw how beautiful that could be. And people respond to beauty. And there's something in all of us very deep that needs it.
And something else to keep in mind, you can't go to your parish priest and say, you know, I would like to have a Latin Mass here. You have to keep in mind, we do have a shortage of priests, number one. And number two, this really surprised me. I don't know why. But most priests don't know, are not trained to do the Latin ritual.
Oh, of course not. It's, you know, it's been gone for a long, long time.
So, I guess. That's just in my lifetime. But, I, you know, I, it surprised me. They didn't know how.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it, so don't go expecting change right now.
But at any rate, I think it'd be a good idea for those people interested to get in contact with the Latin Mass community. Do you want to make that contact, you know, announce that again, Floyd?
Yeah, the website is latinmassblono.org. So latinmassblono.org. And again, that just directs you to the meetup site. So please join the meetup if this interests you. Put up a profile picture so we, you know, so we can see, like, what this community consists of, and in the future, as we push for things like bringing the Latin Mass to Bloomington or Normal, that gives us a lot more credibility if we can really establish a good, strong community who right off the bat would commit to attending this Mass.
Floyd, I think it's been a great program. I'm really glad we've had you here, and I think we've talked about a lot of aspects of the Latin Mass, and I hope we've generated some interest in it. We're going to have to end our show at this time, so we're going to say our ending prayer. Saint Michael, the Archangel,
defend us in battle.
Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls.
Amen.
God bless everybody out there. Please pray for us. We'll pray for you.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.